Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins.
With a total team effort and a shutout, the Carolina Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup for the second time.
That was Sean McDonough with a call on ABC last night. It's a very championship Monday here in the state of North Carolina as the Carolina Hurricanes won the Stanley Cup last night over Las Vegas. And it's a very sports kind of day here at Charlotte Talks. We're taking a break from the calamities near and far, and instead we're going to talk sports, and we're going to begin with a full menu, starting with the return of women's pro basketball for the first time in 20 years to the Queen City. Then we'll continue on with all the excitement over the Carolina Hurricanes, just mentioned their Stanley Cup victory. Beyond that, sports columnist Scott Fowler and sports anchor Danielle Stein from WCNC will join the discussion to break down what's ahead for Charlotte with the MLS All-Star Game, the Charlotte Hornets offseason moves, and the imminent return of the Carolina Panthers. First, though, the Charlotte Crown, part of the new Upshot Women's Pro Basketball League. Trisha Stafford Odom is the team's head coach, and she joins me in studio this morning. She's fresh off a win yesterday over Savannah, no less. Welcome to Charlotte Talks.
Well, thank you, Eric. I'm excited to be here.
Well, everyone's excited to have women's pro basketball back in Charlotte. As I mentioned, it was 20 years ago that the Sting left, the WNBA Sting, and now the Crown are here as part of this new league. You've played 9 games of a 34-game schedule. How would you describe the league and the state of play so far?
The league is definitely something that's excitable and exciting and has a bright future. I think even myself can admit that we did not know, we as coaches and GMs weren't aware how competitive Upshot League was going to be. And as we coaches figure it out, we're adding pieces, taking pieces away, continuously developing players, and the talent is phenomenal.
Well, that was a little bit of a surprise, or was it?
It was a surprise because we weren't actually certain as to who was going to commit to playing in Upshot. You know, there's still the opportunity for women's basketball, women's professionals to play overseas, many different countries. There are other upstart leagues happening in the States. And again, the aspiration for most women right now, most girls, are to look up to play in the WNBA. But we are an alternative league, definitely professional and an optional league for players that don't have those options. And now with the state and climate of America, a lot of people don't want to go overseas. So we actually got an amazing turnout. People are constantly trying to flood our league. And right now, unfortunately, there are only 4 teams in the league. We're definitely expanding, but as of right now, roster spots are solidified, locked down, and people are trying to sustain and maintain their jobs.
Yeah, let's start with the, since you mentioned 4 teams, and they are going to expand. I think Baltimore and Nashville are coming next year, and the owner of the league, Zoyer Sports, has said they want to get to 30 teams eventually, but for the moment, you have 4. So everybody is nice and cozy. What's that like to play the same teams over and over again? How does that change the calculus as a coach?
Nice and cozy, how you put it. I like how you said it. Well, Andy Kaufman, first of all, owner, he is definitely a visionary. And he does definitely see leagues and teams coming and it expanding to about 30. I mean, that has been on record. That's what he wants, along with Donna Orender, who's our president and commissioner. But what we see is right now we're competing against 3 other capable and qualified coaches that are competitive, and we want to win. And more than anything, we want our stamp as the inaugural leaders for each of these teams in these cities to be something to be very, very proud of and go down in the history books. We understand that the responsibilities are great for us. We're going through and sifting through things that other people in the future won't know we went through because we're setting a foundation and setting the precedent for how Upshot League will be, personally, how the Charlotte Crown will be. And we're proud of that. It's not easy, but we call ourselves the the foundation for the future. And welcome to the uprising.
And part of that uprising is, as you mentioned, four teams. The other three are in Greensboro, Savannah, and Jacksonville.
Correct.
From a travel and logistics standpoint, how does that work? I mean, they're relatively close, but do you bus? Do you fly? What's your schedule like?
We charter bus. The schedule is rigorous. I believe there are two times throughout our 33-game season that I have a back-to-back-to-back. And I think that's rigorous. However, we're prepared for it mentally. We try to prepare our players for it physically. And personally, what I've tried to do is design a roster that if some nights I need to play six more heavy than the other, then I'll do that if the game allows that. But we're prepared. I mean, again, and I think the future will definitely make way for the schedule to be less tedious. But we look forward to the improvements that we can have versus each team that we now know hand and foot.
Nobody can say they don't know the other team.
Nobody can say that, you know, that cannot be used as a disclaimer at any level. But to see these three teams and to actually be proud of the fact how we play them better every time, or to expect that, you know, the coaches I'm coaching to get, they're going to make adjustments. So even though it's the same team on record, each time we see differences. And I think that's exciting for us and challenging.
What's it like to play basketball at Bojangles Coliseum? That's your home floor. Mm-hmm. You're getting adjusted to that. You've played a few games there. But what's the climate like there, you think, for basketball?
I love it. I actually love it. I'm not from the Charlotte area, but very, very familiar with it with my coaching stints. And I just think that the history is rich. I love the fact that we're playing on a championship floor, being that our hockey team has been champions. Like, so we come in and we're able to adopt and just acclimate to a winning atmosphere. I'd love to see it more field. I think our inaugural home game was amazing, and we want to get back to the level of people are there regularly supporting our Charlotte Crown, and we'll get there. But I really love the atmosphere. We just got, I don't know how many millions of dollars, maybe thousands of dollars of a brand new basketball court put in. The details are pretty and amazing, and I just love the fact that it is our home court. And no one can take that away from us.
That is the voice of Tricia Stafford Odom. She is the coach of the Charlotte Crown, and they are part of the new Upshot Women's Basketball League. Now, you played in the WNBA yourself. You were a big star in college at Cal, and you went on to coach at a number of colleges, including as an assistant at Duke and UNC. And then you were a head coach at North Carolina Central. What convinced you to take a chance on this league?
More so the league taking a chance on me and my pedigree and what I've done and my history as a coach, my success as a player, and hopefully my reputation as to how I can bring players together and my relationships. I believe that Taj McWilliams Franklin, who is the vice president of operations for Upshot, she and I have had history in the past as competitors on the basketball court. She's been able to follow my success as a coach, as a player, as a family member with a husband and family and sons that play Division I sports. She believes I'm the personality for Charlotte, and I'm grateful for her. But what convinced me was the fact that women's basketball is flourishing and the excitement around it is incomparable. And right now, I don't want to be left out with the opportunity to impart on lives and set foundations and just help the future rise.
It's interesting. You mentioned women's basketball. So in the past couple of years, for example, in 2024, the NCAA Women's Championship game drew more viewers than the men's championship game for the first time. Mm-hmm. Between 2024 and 2025, the expansion fee for WNBA teams went from $50 million to $250 million.
Skyrocketed.
Yes. And when the Sting were here, believe me, nobody was paying $50 million for a team, as you well know. I'm curious, as great as the growth is, the interest, what are some of the challenges that remain when you come into a new league like this?
Definitely the behind the scenes of how to get bodies in seats. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the sale is corporate, so the tickets get sold, but as a fan and as a player and as a coach, we want to actually see those bodies and hear those breaths and cheers and the warmth of bodies actually in seats. So I think the plan and the ploy to get people in there to become avid and consistent fans that don't want to miss games, I think those are the challenges. Someone's asked me about that, remembering the old days of the WNBA, the same challenges. I think I wasn't as aware of that behind the scenes things, but I'm sure that it's quite similar, that you can get corporate dollars, but we also want the intimacy of bodies there. I think the marketing, the talent level, I think also some of the challenges are getting elite officiating to the league, because it's still a startup and people are a little unsure and leery, and you know, people jump on board after it's successful. But what we need is people paddling and on board as we make it phenomenal.
These young ladies that you're coaching, they're obviously not in the WNBA. They're very talented players. Are they able to concentrate on basketball? Do they have to have second jobs? Give me an idea.
Oh, absolutely they can concentrate. This is a professional league, and as a professional, their job is basketball.
Okay.
They're branding themselves because it's all a business right now. So their marketability, their branding capability, all that's tied into being a part of the Charlotte Crown. Financially, it does not sustain as a year-long job right now. They're paid for the 4 months. So at this point in time, playing in Upshot does afford you the opportunity to work elsewhere, pursue other careers. But the focus of the 4 months of our summer league is that you do your best as a professional here, hoping and anticipating that other opportunities will come that will afford you the opportunity to just solely be a basketball player.
Now, you mentioned you want those bodies in there cheering. You want them loyal. For so many fans who may not be aware of the team yet or just learning, or they don't know a lot about women's basketball, or maybe they think they don't like women's basketball, what's the pitch that you make? What are they going to see when they come out, for example, starting Wednesday when you play Greensboro at Bojangles Coliseum?
That's right. You're going to see an exciting brand of sport. For those who don't know basketball, there are different types of basketball. There's the slow down, walk it down, where it's boring. But we try to play transition style of basketball. I call it TSO. Philosophically, it's transition. We get stops defensively, which means we turn the ball over fast, so you get to watch at a rapid pace. And then offense. You're going to be able to see an offensive repertoire from our rostered players capable of making any shot you've seen on any basketball game. I think so. The speed and excitement of the game, the pace is exciting. I think the atmosphere, the music, the liveliness, the family atmosphere, people love those types of things. And then the smell of popcorn and the blowing of whistles. And hopefully, you know, we'll get to the point where you know that your Charlotte Crown is a winning organization and winning program with quality young ladies and people on the roster.
I love the popcorn as the secret weapon.
That's it right there. I mean, I know a lady in there popping popcorn named Phyllis, and she hooks me up every game. So I'm definitely going to give her a shout out. Buttery and everything.
So Phyllis is the secret MVP
Phyllis
of the Charlotte Crown so far?
MVP.
Tricia Stafford Odom, I want to thank you for joining us this morning.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me. Be down with the Crown.
Absolutely. Coach Tricia, as she calls herself, is the coach of the Charlotte Crown. They're in the Upshot League. They return to action Wednesday at Bojangles Coliseum, and they'll be playing all summer long. When we come back, we're going to have Scott Fowler from the Charlotte Observer and Danielle Stein from WCNC, and we're going to talk Hurricanes, we're going to talk Hornets, and we're going to get into all kinds of trouble here. So stay with us and try not to get distracted with thoughts of that popcorn at Bojangles Coliseum. Stay with us on Charlotte Talk. Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg in for Mike Collins, and this is Charlotte Talks. Let's hear what happened last night. That is the crowd at Lenovo Center in Raleigh, where they were having a little watch party. Sounds like they got excited as they were watching the home team, the Carolina Hurricanes, playing many miles away in Las Vegas as they clinched the Stanley Cup Final. This is the second championship for the Hurricanes. They also won in 2006, and they had been to the Stanley Cup one time prior and lost to Detroit. So we now have at least one championship professional sports team here in the Carolinas. But we'll say that we have championship-level sports reporters because with us we have Scott Fowler from the Charlotte Observer. Welcome back.
Thanks, Eric.
And Danielle Stein, who is the weekend sports anchor at WCNC.
That's it.
Welcome to you.
Thank you.
You had a late night as you were on TV telling everybody exactly what had happened.
Yeah, it was pretty much right down to the wire as I was going on air, making sure everything was tidied up. And I'm glad, you know, some of these games went to overtime, so we didn't have the results as we were going on air for 11. But this one was done nice and smooth. We got to see the celebration, and it was just so cool to see.
All nice and tidy. So, Danielle, I'm going to start with you. What do you think this title means, not just for the Canes, but for the region?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. As you mentioned, this isn't a region that's seen a number of championships in the past. Do you want to shout out, of course, Carolina Courage up in Raleigh for the NWSL? They are also a championship team. But out of the pro men's sports, yes, the Canes are the only ones who have done it. And it's been 20 years. 20 years is a long time for people to have waited. And for the Canes, too, who have been really close for the past 8 years or so, where they've been in the playoffs, they've advanced past the first round every single time. They've been close, and it hasn't come together. So to watch it finally come together with this group of players that they were able to pull from a lot of different places, I think just shows that they've been gritty and they've fought really hard to get to this point.
You mentioned those 8 years. Scott, in a cruel act of recording history, wrote a column. I think it was last week, Scott, you said that since 2017, the playoff ledger for victories in this state is, at the time it was Canes 61, so I guess are they at 63 now?
63.
Okay, 63. Right. The Hornets are at zero, Charlotte FC is at two, and the Carolina Panthers come in at zero. So by my count, Scott, it looks like 63 for the Triangle and two for the Charlotte Metro. So given that, what do you think that these teams, and you wrote this in the context of Charlotte sports teams could learn a thing or two from the Hurricanes. What do you think they could learn from the Hurricanes?
Yeah, well, that's right. That was, you know, playoff postseason, and that's where our teams have certainly gotten better. And in the past year, we've seen the Panthers in the playoffs, the Hornets were in the play-in game, and Charlotte FC also made it, but only didn't get out of the first round. So I think what they can learn is just that the Hurricanes are remarkable in their stability, I think. They have, as Danielle mentioned, they've been so close for these 8 years with Rod Brind'Amour as the their head coach, and so they've been knocking on the door, and that's what these teams have lacked here is they've been irrelevant for long stretches, and now they're sort of climbing into relevance. But the Hurricanes are so far beyond that. I mean, these guys are – I mean, I was just – we were talking off air, or maybe it was on air. I don't know if I made a mistake there or not.
Me as well.
I've been at the Charlotte Observer 32 years. I've never covered a championship parade of any type. And here they're having one in Raleigh on Saturday because there hasn't been one to cover here. And
That's really
a unique moment. I'm not a huge hockey guy, but I've been glued to these playoffs, especially the last 2 weeks. Yeah.
The parade is Saturday, downtown Raleigh at 11 a.m. I think, Danielle, you said you're probably going
to
cover it.
I'd like to, at least. I'm gonna try to see what my station will agree to. But, I mean, how cool. Like we said, it's not every day that you get a championship in your state. So,
yes,
well worth celebrating.
Scott, you mentioned the stability of Rod Brind'Amour. He was almost at a loss for words last night.
You don't want to let yourself think that it could happen. And yeah. I don't know what else to tell you. Just couldn't be prouder of the group.
Jordan Stahl, the MVP, was equally excited and talking about the effect of just grinding away through a long hockey season.
To be able to keep grinding, keep going, keep pushing, and get beat down again and not get it and regroup and go again and finally pull this off, it's a dream come true. It's indescribable.
And forward Sebastian Aho agreed that it is a dream come true.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's just, you work so hard for so long, and you never know if you're ever going to be a champion till it's all said and done. And even today, like, we feel confident. We know how we play hockey, but, you know, it's just kind of nerve-wracking, and it's so much fun to feel all the emotions.
Now, Scott and I confessed to each other before the show that we are bandwagon hoppers. We joined probably in the spring is when we caught hockey fever. Danielle, I don't know. Are you? Do you follow hockey a lot? At what point did you kind of pick this story up, and what stands out to you about this run?
No, I mean, this run's been awesome. I will say, of course, we typically show our highlights for every game throughout the season. But, you know, as you're starting to see things trending towards playoffs, that's when you really dial things in. But no, this team has been really fun all year long. But watching what they've been able to do in the postseason when they had such a streak of just winning games, shutting out series, it was really easy to catch on to it.
Scott, what stood out for you? Are there moments or games that, you know, particularly resonated with you?
Well, I thought I like that they switched goalies midway through the Stanley Cup. That's just so weird and unusual in hockey. And they went to this guy, Brandon Bussey, who's like got this great backstory. And they kept showing his fiance and his parents in the stands. And he just seemed like a guy who had really climbed up the hockey mountain the very hard way. It wasn't easy. He was a rookie. You know, he had a great season, but then he gets benched and then he comes back in. Just, I guess that to me was, and Stahl, Jordan Stahl, who's 37 years old and yet was the MVP. 37 years old? I mean, Luke Kuechly retired at 28. That's nine
That's
years after that, you know? And he's been playing 17 years. Hockey players do have long careers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the good ones can really stick around a long time. But I like, being an old guy myself, like to see an old guy get the MVP.
And, Scott mentioned the story of Brandon Bussey. I thought it was really interesting. Danielle, you were covering last night, so I'm sure you saw this. His interview, he immediately went to praising the other goalie, the league goalie, Anderson, who had been the guy that got them there, but then he turned cold when they got into the Stanley Cup. I just thought that was interesting, a moment, kind of some insight into why this team is probably successful.
Yeah, and I think everyone is very quick to also credit Freddie Anderson for getting them throughout the whole season as well, too, because he was extremely integral in getting them to be positioned to where they were in the playoffs. And whether Freddie was hurt at that point in game three, we still don't know the full details. It does sound like he might have been dealing with something, and that is why Brandon Bussey ended up coming in and taking over the back half of the Stanley Cup Finals series. But it's a small group. It's a really tight goaltending group that they have to support each other. It's one of the more interesting sports rather than soccer, where, for example, a goalie will stay in pretty much every single game. You have your starter. In hockey, you do rotate, so you need to have everyone be ready for when your name is called, and you only have to push each other to kind of get each other to that point so you are ready. So I'm sure they have a good relationship. It speaks volumes that Jordan Stahl gave Freddie Anderson the trophy seconds when they got it, showing that, again, he is a huge part of where they were getting to that Stanley Cup final. Mm-hmm.
That is the voice of Danielle Stein. She is weekend sports anchor at WCNC. Also with us is Scott Fowler, who's a columnist at the Charlotte Observer. Scott, you obviously have been, you mentioned 32 years, and I think you went to UNC Chapel Hill, so you've been in this part of the world most of your life. Why do you think hockey has resonated in Raleigh the way it has?
You know, it's one of the great stories, I think, of our region, because I remember when, you know, and of course, if you go back a long way, that wasn't an expansion team. It was a team that moved. Where did it come from?
Hartford. Whalers.
The Whalers.
Right. That's what I thought. So it's been a while. When did they come? I mean, it's been 25 years, something like that.
Yeah. 20, remember they played in Greensboro the first year or two?
And it was terrible attendance back in the day. But it's really grown into it had a couple of factors. Raleigh, of course, is a super hot city, just like Charlotte. So people move there. And so, you know, hockey fans, they got some probably hockey fans moving from other places. But I think it really caught on in the South because, of course, Raleigh is a huge college sports town. And we should mention when we're talking about championships, I mean, there have been innumerable championships in the college ranks. You know, Duke and had won like probably five in this period just in men's basketball. But they didn't have a pro sport really to latch on to, whereas Charlotte has had two and now has three of the top-level pro sports I'm talking about. And so I think that if you were, whether you're a Tar Heel fan, Duke fan, NC State fan, whatever, you could sort of all mesh together and be a Canes fan, and that was not controversial. That's just something. And they play at a good time of year, like all the college teams are done, other than UNC baseball's in the College World Series right now. But in general, They're all finished when the Hurricanes are doing their big run. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a lot of it, and it has become – I mean, it's a great – great. Those watch parties.
I mean, the tailgating and the watch parties, Lord. It's incredible.
Insane. Yeah.
I was seeing something yesterday that was talking about the benefit of these mid, I would call Raleigh a mid-major market compared to a city like a New York or LA, for sure. example. And having a pro sports team in those types of cities and what it's able to do, thinking of, I don't know, I'm thinking Columbus, for example, mm-hmm. is another one, not a major city. Maybe there's not so much going on. So having a rallying point around a city like that, I think is able to bring a lot of people together in a new kind of way as well, too.
Now, it's interesting with the Hurricanes, as you both know, Tom Dundon bought the team in 2018. In March, he led an investor group that bought the Portland Trailblazers for $4.25 billion, just some sofa money. And he's publicly stated his intention to pursue Major League Baseball in the Triangle. And then last week, we had a former owner of the Milwaukee Bucks, a billionaire named Mark Lazary, who owns part of the NC Courage, which is the women's professional team. He said he'd like to join that effort or lead an effort. He wants to bring Major League Baseball to North Carolina. So I'm curious for each of you, what do you think of this idea of North Carolina with Major League Baseball? It is the largest state without an MLB team.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, the southern states, I think, are just kind of made for baseball. Just weather-wise, it makes sense. We see even Knights games, the support around that. I mean, gorgeous stadium, perfect location. I'm not saying that's where it would be if there were an MLB team coming to the state by any means. But I think there's some proven success in this state. And it's summer. It's fun. It's warm weather. I think it would do really well here.
I agree. And I think it would, if it goes somewhere, I think Raleigh's way ahead of Charlotte in that capacity.
I agree.
So, you know, back in the day, we've had this, an effort a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And at one point, it felt kind of like they might put a team around Kernersville, if you remember
that.
That's
right.
It was in the Winston-Salem area.
That's right.
I can't remember who the owner
was. Don Beaver that tried to do
that? Yes, Don Beaver. Yeah. That's right. And he had some, you know, legitimate money and minor league baseball interests. But Raleigh does seem to me, I think what's happened here with the hockey is hugely important to the Major League Baseball bid. Now, MLB's got a lot of choices, and they haven't even really announced their expansion, what it would cost and all that stuff. But does, like you say, feels like North Carolina being, what are we, the 10th most populous state? Yeah. How do we not have Major League Baseball already? Mm-hmm. I think it would work.
Especially it feels like, and I know people are laughing because Charlotte has perpetually been 5 or 10 years away from MLB.
Always.
That's what we always say. Yeah. But now when you have the Triangle and Charlotte as two of the fastest growing regions in the country, it does seem to make a lot of sense. So I think MLB's expansion target is 2029, so they've got a little time to figure this out. We will see. Let's move on. The NBA Finals, as you know, wrapped up Saturday night. The New York Knicks overcame the opposition of Victor Wembanyama and the adoration of Timothée Chalamet, among others, and they captured their first championship in 53 years behind Jalen Brunson. So how do you think the finals played out for the league this year, each of you? Danielle, you start.
We got so spoiled with both of these series, I think. I was honestly hoping both of them between the NBA and the NHL went to Game 7 because I didn't want them to end. They were both so exciting and really back and forth, really high-scoring contests all the way through. The way that the NBA finals ended, it was a picture-perfect story. Watching New York do it to break a curse after 50 plus years, to have come back down 29 points in that game. Yes, it was a collapse from San Antonio. We can talk about that part as well, too. But New York seems to have a star in Jalen Brunson. And whether there are questions or not about his validity to lead a team to a championship, I think that's pretty squashed at this point. I mean, he carried that team in that win. So really cool to see. Knicks in five, as everyone's been saying, all over my social media at least, has been really crazy. But no, I mean, to have a 20-year curse, a 50-plus year curse, all coming down this one weekend, we had a fun sports 48 hours here.
And Scott, you know, as much as many of us may like to pick on the New York teams, those of us who are not in New York or maybe not from New York, the leagues love it when a team, particularly a storied franchise like the Knicks, wins an NBA championship. That really spurs interest for the following season.
It does. You
didn't mean to say Spurs. That was not nice. Sorry.
The TV ratings showed you that. You know, they were really high for, you know, and I mean, Taylor Swift jumped on the Knicks bandwagon. I don't know where that came from, you know, in one of those games. Yeah, that was two exceptional young stars there, especially Wemby is kind of a guy who we're going to be watching for the next 10 years or so, as long as he stays healthy. Mm-hmm. He is a just as a, you know, his nickname is the alien, a 7 foot five guy who can shoot threes and do everything else. He's just the kind of monumental star that a league loves. And then, but Brunson was better. I mean, Brunson, you know, Wemby looked tired in the fourth quarter of those last two games. And Brunson was, it's funny to see those two guys next to each other.
Yes,
they're
it
like
is.
Probably 18 inches apart. I mean, and yet Brunson was scored 45 in the final game. And, just seems like a super likable guy. The Knicks seems I don't like the New York teams generally either. I feel like New York gets everything and wants everything and is very spoiled. They've had championships in all sports. But this Knicks team was super likable.
Yeah, they were really hard to hate.
They were.
Boston, and I had a hard time saying that. I will say I was interested in seeing, because obviously people have been, you know, Wemby coming in second in the MVP race, and he's clearly getting a lot of love. But I think the narrative around him could be kind of changing, that New York at least is painting him more as this quote-unquote villain throughout the series. And even in his final press conference saying, see you never, to the reporters in the media room there. It's interesting now, is that going to be his persona? He's still so young, so he could totally just flip his narrative, and maybe that's going to be the Wemby of the future.
Yeah, that's true. Bad guy sells too.
It does. Hey, everybody needs a Darth Vader.
Absolutely.
He could play. He could do one. He could do that beautifully. I don't know. He just seems to me super young. I feel like, what is he, 22?
Yeah.
And he should have shook hands with everybody at the end of the game five, but. Yeah.
We'll shake hands, take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about our NBA team, the Charlotte Hornets. They've got some bright prospects, but they got a lot of work to do as well. Stay with us right here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg in for Mike Collins, and we're continuing our discussion of sports across the region with Charlotte Observer columnist Scott Fowler and WCNC weekend sports anchor Danielle Stein. We were talking a little bit about the Knicks and the Spurs, and that leads us to the Hornets. The Hornets have two first-round picks this year, number 14 and number 18. They've just extended head coach Charles Lee's contract, and of course, they made it to the play-in round. They still have the longest playoff drought, but they got a little bit closer. So for each of you, what are you looking for in offseason moves from this team to get better?
I'll start. I think what we saw in the play-in game and maybe really the last couple of weeks of the season, they don't quite have the front court, the big guys, quite figured out yet. They have some players there, some fairly skilled players there, but their strength is the backcourt, where they have LaMelo and they have Konkanipal and they have Brandon Miller. Three guys who you could say might be an all-star one day. LaMelo has been one time. But where they need to go is they've got to find either through free agency or those draft picks or trade those draft picks is some really big, tough guys. They need some enforcers, basically. I think that's they got bullied too much in the last 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, they talked a lot about how everyone's offseason goal could and should be upping the physicality, upping the size. We've even seen Musa Diabate in the offseason work he's been putting in and the visible muscle he's already gained even in just a couple of months. So it sounds like he's taking that to heart, but there's been a lot of links of potential trades for who could be coming. I'm not, you know, nothing's been finalized by any means, but the name Sabonis has been thrown around a good bit. But even in the draft, it's very possible that the Hornets do look for a big man in a center position in one of those picks, whether they want to trade up further. Because like we said, there's two first-round picks, which is a bit of a luxury. Mm-hmm. But they also are a team that showed that they do need some more depth to them as well. I think that is something that kind of burned them in the end of their season. Yes, they had Coby White, who was excellent, and it sounds like his deal will hopefully be getting done in the next week or so as well, too. It sounds like he wants to stay in Charlotte. It sounds like they want him in Charlotte. Nothing's been officially finalized. But outside of him, there wasn't a lot of great bench depth. So getting more rotational pieces, too, I think could be really helpful for them as well.
You're right, Scott. The last game when they were blown out by Orlando, it just felt like men against boys. They were just throwing them around all over the court. There has been, as Danielle mentioned, there have been trade rumors. A lot of them have involved Miles Bridges. What do you think the chances are Miles Bridges is on the court at Spectrum Center when we get back to work in October?
Well, that's the one expendable piece they have of their quartet of scorers. Miles Bridges has proven himself. He had some off-field, off-court issues, but now is a couple of years past that and is the kind of player who can do a lot of different things. So I think that's – you can't trade probably LaMelo, Brandon Miller, or Knipple. Beyond that, anyone's probably up for grabs, Bridges being a definite possibility there. But, yes, I think they just got to get – you know, we saw them – I remember a Detroit game late in the year, same sort of thing. They're just getting mashed around and they're just, you know, Moose, their you know, kind of undersized center is a great guy, very popular fan favorite, but he's undersized compared to – some of these guys who are 7 feet and 240, they need another guy like that.
We were talking about the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup this weekend. I don't know if y'all heard about this, but Team USA had a little win on Friday.
Just a little one.
They beat Paraguay 4-1, and they will play Australia on Friday in Seattle at what used to be known as Lumen Field. I believe it's now Seattle Stadium, courtesy of FIFA.
Yes, FIFA really goes overboard on that lack of sponsorship stuff.
Curious, and by the way, I should mention Charlotte FC's Tim Ream is the U.S. team captain. Danielle, you interviewed former men's team player Josie Altidore when the U.S. men's team was here for one of their final tune-ups. What did you make of his perspective, and also what did you make of the Charlotte turnout in response to the U.S. men's team?
Yeah, I mean, so he was someone who was on two different World Cup teams, 2010 and 2014. Unfortunately, that 2014, he had a pretty severe injury where he ended up having to get carted off in the World Cup. So that kind of ended his tenure with the national team in that regard there. But he had a lot of really good perspective, and he was really high on this group. And I think a lot of people now are starting to see the vision. Of course, a good win to open your World Cup can do that for you, but there's a lot of belief that this team could be the one that is going to actually break through for a U.S. men's national team. We've seen some of the pieces from previous years, the last World Cup, guys like Christian Pulisic, Sergino Dest, Weston McKennie, guys who are back again, but having some newer faces added to the group, notably in Balogun, who this is his first World Cup playing with America since he has declared that's going to be his national team moving forward after he was with the youth English teams when he was growing up. So getting new pieces like that and also a new manager in Pochettino, this team is off to a fiery start. I mean, what a dream start for their World Cup run. And getting, of course, the home field advantage of the crowd support. We saw it in Charlotte when they just had their final friendly here. It was awesome. It was so loud. It was packed with fans. And at SoFi Stadium this past weekend, it was nuts. And any watch party you saw across the country, I mean, people are really showing up in droves right now for this team.
Scott, I'm curious, you know, it's been kind of ugly with the World Cup lead in.
The men's. The women's do well.
Right, yeah. but there's been so much controversy about ticket prices, ticket procedures, travel visas, all these things. Gianni Infantino, who runs FIFA, it seems like he's in a controversy every other day.
Oh, yeah.
Does that win Friday and I guess some optimistic prospects for Team USA, does that begin to wash that away and maybe bring a little of the joy back to it?
Well, fortunately for FIFA, it probably does, because I don't like FIFA generally. I think it's an organization that, I mean, they just make a lot of questionable decisions. But all that aside, it's a great tournament, and it's hard to mess it up. They've got 48 teams this year, so there's, you know, it's expanded. 32 teams will make the playoffs, and so that's expanded. So the U.S. almost certainly is going to make the playoffs after that first win. So, yes, I think, like a lot of things, it's like the NCAA men's tournament. People criticize the NCAA basketball, you know, NCAA bad this, bad that, and then the tournament starts and everyone forgets and they're like, oh my gosh, did you see that last second shot? And that's kind of what's happening, I think, with this World Cup. Great stuff. I mean, it's been, as Danielle said, it's been so much fun.
Yeah, 25 million people watched that opening game, which is
wow.
That's comparable. That's huge for any soccer match in the U.S. And that's like a top flight NFL Sunday night game. And that I don't say that to be dismissive. That's a lot of people for any sporting event in the U.S. So we will see how that turns out. Speaking of soccer and Bank of America Stadium, the World Cup ends July 19th, and then on July 29th, the best MLS players will take on the best players from the Mexican Soccer League mm-hmm. at Bank of America Stadium, the MLS All-Star Game. This is the first time we've had this. How are y'all looking at this? What do you expect to see with this All-Star Game?
Yeah, it's another win for Charlotte, getting a major event here in the city. I mean, it's going to bring big names, whether or not they play, looking at Lionel Messi when I say that.
I don't think Messi will play that, but no. You know, maybe he will. I'd be pleasantly surprised if he does, but it's still going to be fantastic.
It's going to be fantastic. Huge names. Even just coming off of the heels of a World Cup, people are going to still have that soccer fever. They're calling this the summer of soccer for a reason, where everyone's going to be buying in. Even Tim Ream being already named a player for the MLS All-Star for that team playing against Liga MX, that he's going to have another fan base just outside of Charlotte now from people who know him from the national team and know him of, oh, he was just our captain. So I think it's going to be a lot of faces, and it should be a fun time.
Scott, how do you look at soccer and its growth over the past, you know, 5-10 years? You've been here that entire span.
You mean in Charlotte?
In Charlotte, yes.
Yeah, I think it's we're seeing it mature. It's become, like, I coach youth soccer for many years, and I'm like a lot of parents who just kind of got more into it as their kids got into it. And those kids now grow up, and they can buy tickets. And, you know, Charlotte FC is a very young demographic compared to if you go to a Panthers game in the same place. Charlotte FC's demographic is what marketers to die for, basically. You know, that's what you want, the 18 to 34-year-old crowd or whatever. I still don't think we're all the way there, of course, but it's not an anomaly anymore mm-hmm. when it attracts 30,000 people. That's just kind of normal. Mm-hmm. And I think the Major League Soccer will be one more thing. I think what they need is they need a run from Charlotte FC. They need a team to go a long way in the playoffs, and they'll catch that casual fan that like the Hurricanes mm-hmm. caught. And they're not there yet, but I mean, their coach, Dean Smith, and yes, not that Dean Smith, but Charlotte FC's coach, Dean Smith, is a riot. He needs a bigger microphone and a bigger audience. He needs to be on here probably every week because, oh my gosh, that guy's great. And the British accent even makes it, he's funny and just, but they need to, like all sports, you got to win.
Yeah. Danielle, as you know, David Tepper has been pretty blunt about his expectation to have Women's World Cup matches at Bank of America Stadium in 2031. How likely do you think that is, and how do you think it would do here?
They're talking about it already almost like it's a done deal. Mm-hmm. It's been interesting. I mean, even at the friendly we just had here in Charlotte between the U.S. and Senegal, we heard from Governor Josh Stein mm-hmm. in the press box, and he came over and spoke, and he was pretty much like, absolutely, we're putting our name in for a bid for being a host for the Women's World Cup. I think it's unfortunate that they didn't, you know, get up to speed to get their name in for this men's World Cup, because, again, pro soccer hadn't really caught on here in the city. Maybe the stadium wasn't fully renovated to their liking, things like that. Now, this present day Bank of America Stadium, I think, would have made for a great venue. I think we could all say, especially after that friendly, yeah, we wanted that in the city, because it was so fun to see just like the mixing of cultures and everything like that as well, too. But as we know, the Women's World Cup attracts major, major top talent from across the world, too. So I think this would be a great great spot. And also, North Carolina is a hotbed for women's soccer as well, too, looking at the college ranks, looking at the pro ranks as well.
And the stadium will have had a little $800 million fixer-upper by the time.
Just a little,
By the way, as you know, Scott, there's another team that plays there. They're called the Carolina Panthers. And in 5 weeks, they're going to be back to work, which means you're going to be back to work at the practice field. Yeah. So we know a couple of things. Jalen Coker, the receiver, signed a extension. I think it was a 4-year deal, $35 million.
Yeah, big money.
We know that Dan Morgan, the GM, has exercised the option on quarterback Bryce Young, so he's here through at least 2027. What else are you looking for as they move back to training camp?
Well, I think what's heartening, if you're a Panthers fan, is there's finally some stability there. This will be Dave Canales' third year as the head coach. This will be Bryce Young's fourth year as the quarterback, and those are the two most important things on any NFL team. So they've got the coach quarterback thing solved, they think, right now, and they're at a point now, Eric, where they are filling holes as opposed to just trying to right the sinking ship. Now they're more like they're on a cruise, but they need a couple of more ports that are, nice. For all the good work they did last year, they still had a losing record. Mm-hmm. So they want to improve that. They want to improve their pass rush. They signed a guy named Jalen Phillips, who will be a star here as a big-time edge rusher and a good personality. I like that guy a lot. What about you, Danielle?
Yeah, he was awesome. I think we saw 2 years back the Panthers had what we all called a historically poor defense. Mm-hmm. It was
awful.
Statistically, one of the worst defensive performances. So to see the continual investment in that side of the ball, in getting Devin Lloyd, getting Jalen Phillips, like you just mentioned, big names in free agency, to be able to attract top talent to Carolina as well, rather than, free agency, maybe, hey, I don't want to go to a team like that. That's not being said anymore. This is now a team that is showing they're young and they're hungry and they're growing. So guys with experience actually do want to come here. So that's what Jalen Phillips was. I asked him straight up during his introductory press conference. I said, what about Carolina was attractive for you as a landing spot? And he said it was that youthful energy. He's a vet. He has experience, but he said he likes to feed off of that to kind of make him feel young too, but also be that leader. And he said, I know that in other teams, I might have had to kind of carry. Whereas here, I can do my job, yes, but I know others around me are also very capable as well. Being on a defense with J.C. Horn, Derek Brown, Mike Jack, for examples, that's a side that's starting to become more and more dangerous each year.
So are we convinced that Bryce Young is the guy long term? Is that now cemented?
Well, until proven otherwise, yes. I think so.
That's a little bit of a pause, Scott.
Listen, I've been on and off the Bryce bandwagon. I jumped on and off so many times. I got scuff marks. But right now, his best season was last year. What I really like about Bryce, what everyone likes about him, he's clutch. He's had 6 fourth quarter comebacks last year. He's not as good in the first 3 quarters as he probably needs to be. So why are they always having to come back? What you would love to see them get some 10-point leads, 14-point leads this year, and just coast to victory. They haven't had a lot of those. But Bryce, they are surrounding him with a few more weapons every year, and he just seems, in the mini camp that Danielle and I were at this past week, Bryce just looks, one thing he did was throw a bunch of F-bombs around, which is interesting for Bryce Young, who is very much an All-American kind of guy.
Buttoned
up. He's really feeling himself. I think he feels like he can take this, kind of in charge. And I think that's actually a good sign.
Yeah, he's exuding confidence, I think, in a lot of different ways in terms of his leadership. So far, just viewing on the field, he looks confident in his decision-making as well, too. And like you said, weapons-wise, he does have some more options. Thinking back to last year, Jalen Coker, who they just gave a big payday to, played very little of the season. So the hope is that they're going to have a healthy receiver core with, of course, the reigning offensive rookie of the year and Tetairoa McMillan back. And everyone's hoping to take that next step forward.
That will have to be the last word. That's Danielle Stein from WCNC. Also, my thanks to Scott Fowler. My thanks to Tricia Stafford Odom of the Charlotte Crown. The one thing we didn't get to, but we'll get to next time, is Luke Kuechly is going to have a great year because he's going in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in a few weeks. Thanks for being with us right here on Charlotte Talks. I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins. Have a great day, everybody.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.